from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on the G and Ursula Show on this gorgeous Monday morning. It is going to be another beautiful week of weather around here. We are spoiled, I tell you. G is off today. He is a little under the weather. And Spike O'Neill is in once again. Thank you, Spike.
And after a couple months, I've learned how to turn buttons on and off, too. This is great. And I appreciate
it's only
you guys
been a few decades.
Yeah.
Well, we have a big, big, big hour for you. The Seahawks had a rough weekend, but so did the Mariners. How do these recent losses affect their chances of getting into the playoffs? We're going to find that out during the Rick Riz Show, which comes right after Heather's newscast at 10:30. But right now,
what's new at 10?
And here's a question for all of you. Text us on our State Roofing text line, 888-973-5476. The question is, should business owners who are impacted by Sound Transit's constantly delayed construction schedule get money for losing business? That is what Stephen Salamone, who is the owner of Salamone's Pizza in Tacoma, is demanding. He tells King 5 News that at first, he was excited about Sound Transit coming to his neighborhood, but then construction started.
When they closed the roads, they took all the parking, they barricaded essentially my entire shop with their heavy construction vehicles. My sales dipped. Every time they closed the roads, my sales went right down.
And now light rail extension to Tacoma has been pushed to 2023. Maybe even longer, but that's where it is for now. And this business owner says 3 years of delays are already too much.
They're still, you know, going to be back here closing all the roads, taking all the parking with their vehicles. So, yeah, it's unconscionable what they've done. And I do believe that if Sound Transit wants to operate like that poorly, it should cost them, not us.
So you are on the jury. He takes this to court. How are you ruling based on just the little bit that I gave you here?
You know, when I heard this story initially, I thought there's no way this guy's got a case because that's the cost of doing business. I mean, what's going to happen is light rail's coming in to bring you tons more customers. Should you take part in paying for the service that's coming your way? No, that's just the benefit of where you are and what's the process of growth that is happening in front of you. But I hear where I couldn't rule for him, but I'm sympathetic to what he's saying. I mean, Sound Transit gets to just, I know they don't do this on purpose, but when you're spending somebody else's money, which Sound Transit and all government people are doing, they're spending our money, not their own.
Really well.
They have no qualms about, you know, taking delays, taking extensions. There's issues that come up that are beyond their control, but they're not held accountable. So it's nothing on them to push it out to 2023 while this guy has no parking, no access to his business, roads are closed. But that happens all the time. There's 1,000 examples of businesses going under during construction.
And Sound Transit has, you know, we had used to work with somebody who sold her house because Sound Transit was going through Shoreline. And so she was given a certain amount of money and they tried to make her whole. But in the case of a business like this, I mean, you can see where if it constantly gets delayed, I mean, what's to say that you can even hold on that long?
You most often can't. My wife was born and raised in the Burien area, and they just did a major civic project along the Burien, I think it's 152nd, the main road that runs through Burien. And it's beautiful now with wider walkways and more parking and updated infrastructure because the city down there is growing as well. But every business on that corridor during the construction, every single one went out of business. She used to work for a jeweler that was in business for a family jeweler. For 75 years, this business was open. And in 3 years of construction, they were done. They just couldn't hold on. And the businesses that are there now are doing great because they've got all this new, you know, traffic and all this new amenities. But that's the cost.
But is there a precedent where an agency like a Sound Transit does have to pay because of continued delays? I mean, if that were the case, think of how long it took for the I-5 construction in Tacoma. I mean, that thing just went on and on and on and on. Now, the difference would be you could still drive I-5.
Yeah, I mean, like, Spike, I'm on the same side as you. I'm sympathetic to this guy. And you know, the city of Seattle, they compensated a lot of businesses when the viaduct was closed, and there were tons of construction down there. So the city delegated some funds. Now, Tacoma's not going to do that because this is not their problem. It's not their construction issue. So why should Tacoma voters have to pony up for it? The problem is, do you really want people to have the ability to do this? Because let's get real, business or government picks winners and losers, and it's unfortunate, but it is a fact of life. It's an absolute fact of life. And if you're to try and fairly compensate every single loser from government construction projects, we talk about the cost of Sound Transit construction right now being exorbitant. Can you imagine if Sound Transit and taxpayers were on the hook for forking over dough for every single business that had a road closure or a street closure or anything of that measure? Now, 3 years is egregious, you know, stretching to potentially 4 or 5. It's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. So I don't know what this guy's recourse is. He absolutely should be yelling and you know, hammering about this. But I don't want to pay for it as a taxpayer, because that would set an awful precedent.
Well, but here's 253 says, because it's Sound Transit, but if this were a private builder, it would be ruled in favor of the business to make
whole,
right?
Yes,
I mean,
it would.
If
a company came onto your street and was doing a project for one of your neighbors, and they kept everybody from your store, the people doing that job would be accountable. That's why they're bonded and insured businesses. So isn't there some way? I mean, I really do feel for this guy. Well, it's one thing when you've got a project that's got a schedule and they adhere to it and it's an interruption of your business. But when the schedule is just thrown out the window and it goes to 3 or even 5 years of destroying your business, isn't there somewhere this guy can go for help?
Yeah,
the state, if not the Sound Transit?
You would think.
You would hope.
Yeah, you would think. So it'll be interesting to see how this case bears out.
What's the name of the Salamone Pizza?
Salamone, right.
Maybe we can help. Maybe say, you know, hey, Cairo audience.
At least go to the business. How's that? Okay, here's something that got chefs blood boiling over the weekend. We heard the story last week, but we really didn't get into the details. And this has to do with Columbia University. How much can you trust the U.S. News and World Report's best college rankings that we hear about every single year? And there was a whistleblower from Columbia University, and this person is saying, don't believe those rankings. And here's why. So this is a mathematics professor. His name is Michael Fideas, and he alleges that the university cooked the books and turned in a bunch of misleading information about class sizes, claimed that all of the university's faculty held the highest degrees in their fields. Of course, that they were, you know, people with scientific research that is published, which is all important, in order to secure these top rankings with U.S. News and World Report. Thaddeus also said the university hugely overstated spending on instruction, claiming that it far exceeded other Ivy League universities. But they did that, he says, by adding the cost of patient care in the medical school. So, of course, the cost is going to go up. So Columbia University was ranked number 2 in the nation last year. But as a result of these allegations, which apparently were proven, Columbia University said, oh, my gosh, our bad. We made a mistake. We need to change it. So the publication U.S. News dropped Columbia number 18, which begs the question, should we even be paying attention to any of these college rankings? Should you just assume that every college is doing the same thing, cooking their books?
I think maybe you can assume that there's some disingenuous reporting going to this. And this is like the Yelp of college. Is that this
right? Well,
this,
not the survey? Quite. The U.S. News and World Report, I got to look into when they started this, but when it used to actually be a magazine that you would buy, and then now it's all online, but it would be their most popular edition because, I mean, let's face it. All of us helicopter parents want
They want
our
the best
kids
opportunity
to go to
for our kid. Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, and
yes.
To that end, parents may have an argument that say, look, we based our decision on where to send our child to school on this report. You know, we made a massive financial commitment. We took on loads of debt to get our kid into Columbia because you said this was the number 2 university in the nation. We want to give our child every chance to be successful. And then you were giving us a false advertising. You were giving us a bill of goods.
You know what that's called? That's
lying.
Called fraud.
Yes, thank you.
I think we remember the college admission scandal,
Becky?
Where there were parents, Becky's mom, where there were parents going to prison for submitting fraudulent applications to a university. Well, isn't this exactly what Columbia did at a much vaster scale? I mean, the idea behind why you would send Becky's mom to jail is, look...
Becky's mom... No, it's Becky from Full House.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
It's Becky
mom.
Went to jail. That was a great episode of Full House, by the way. Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Becky
the reason
to the
why
house.
She went to jail is because her daughter took the place of some other student who had a right to be there and was potentially financially harmed by her daughter taking that spot.
Absolutely.
Well, how much did Columbia University profit from being number two in this college rankings?
Right.
How much money did other universities lose out on because of that? How many parents made the decision to send their child to Columbia because, you know what? Columbia is number two. And guess what? They have really small class sizes. I know all their professors are top accredited. I know that they are spending the most per student out of all of the universities in the U.S. They must really care about the quality of my child's individual education.
Right.
Well, you lied to every single one of those parents, and nothing will happen from this, I guarantee you, except Columbia being punished this year. But this is the difference between blue collar crime and white collar crime. If a parent submits a fraudulent application on behalf of their child, they go to jail. If the university does it at a much vaster scale, sorry, nothing we can do.
It's not going to be criminal, though. I mean, maybe someone would have a civil suit. Again,
And they may have, they have grounds. It seems they have grounds through fraud.
Right, but here's what I want to know. Like, what is U.S. News and World Report's role in this? Like, how much checking do they do when universities turn in their stats?
Mm.
And remember, there are universities that will offer full ride scholarships to kids purely based on, you know, GPA test scores that the kid may not have zero interest on it, but they want to even just say, hey, we offered or someone accepted, just to try to raise the stats.
So they're trying to raise their overall GPA of their entire student body by bringing in grade ringers. To balance out a couple of members of the football team who may be bringing down the aggregate GPA.
I think when
you've got athletes on campus, and I don't mean to harp on any university or any particular sport, but when you've got athletes on campus whose priority may not be their academic achievements, you're going to lower the GPA. Those students are going to lower the overall GPA of a university, and that's one of the major selling points of a university is the overall GPA and the rate of graduation. So you bring in some ringers of solid 4.0 GPAs to bring up the average.
It's such a racket, though, and I fell hook, line, and sinker with our oldest son. I mean, I was into this whole, and he's gotten to a ranked school.
Because you want the best for them. That's your job.
You do. But even... my student who went to this school and
was that she could be a party saying my boy's at Columbia. I don't know if you know about
that. It was at UCLA, which makes a lot
of the pretty nice
rankings. He said, you know what? This ranking stuff, it's just a bunch of BS. I mean, he just said it really is all about what you do in this school, whatever school it is that you end up going to. He had a great experience, but he was telling me, you get out what you get in. He said, for my kids, I'm not going to even worry about college rankings. I'm going to tell them, whatever you do in whatever college you pick, if you choose to go to college, whatever college you pick, just make the most of it, make connections, you know, get those internships, et cetera. Because no one is going to care, again, about college rankings.
If you ghost walk through a great school, you're going to get nothing out of it.
Well, I think here's why you should care about college rankings, because universities have fundamentally shifted how they provide education and how they structure their university in order to achieve higher rankings on this list. So they're not optimizing for student performance. They are not optimizing for the best experience for your kid, the most face time between your professor and your child. They're optimizing for U.S. News and World Report because they want more money.
Yes.
They're not about quality of education. If you're in that like top 50 to 100 tier of universities in the U.S., that's what they're competing for. The smaller universities, they can take a look at those individual students and say, you know, we're trying to be here for you. We're not trying to make the list. And frankly, as a parent, that's exactly the type of university that I would want to go to.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, let's squeeze in one more because we need to talk about President Biden and a moment that I think most of us have been waiting for. Apparently, no one in the White House was prepared for what President Biden had to announce on 60 Minutes last night.
Is the pandemic over?
The pandemic is over. We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it. But the pandemic is over.
So apparently he caught some of his aides by surprise.
That's
and now some folks are scrambling. But here's the question. Have you noticed the pandemic is over?
Yes.
So
I mean, COVID's not over.
COVID is not
as
over.
As much fun as we like to make of Sleepy Joe, Grandpa Joe, the way he talks so slow and he's got a bit of a stutter and everybody likes to make fun of him, he's spot on. I mean, we've got hundreds of people dying on a daily basis, which is no small thing.
No.
And there are still unknowns about this virus as it evolves and mutates and keeps coming back in variations. And there's still concerns we have to have. But as a society, we're not going to be closing down schools. We're not going to be closing down businesses. We're not going to be mandating masks or mandating vaccines. So the pandemic is over. He's spot on.
No, it's not.
He'll be crucified for saying that.
Until inflation comes down from like close to 9% because China's still pursuing a COVID zero policy. Pandemic means global. That means that it's not over until every country in the world decides that their official policies make it so.
That's fair.
If that is the definition, it's not going to be over for a very, very long time.
Furthermore, if I was a conservative radio host, I would light up Biden for giving student loan debt as an emergency under his, emergency pandemic orders. I have the power to do so. And then 2 weeks later coming out and saying the pandemic is over. That seems bogus to me.
Maybe he should have said the pandemic is in a very, very different phase. But I mean,
yeah.
I think the World Health Organization and others are also kind of going with that idea that we can basically very close to now call it over. The fact that we're just going to be living with it.
We're
going
to be living our lives with it now. We're going to go back to some sense of normalcy. I'm just refreshed to hear somebody say that inflation is tied to a global pandemic. Thank you, Chef. For the last 6 months, all I've heard about is how inflation is nothing but Joe Biden's fault individually. It's all his policies. That's been driving me nuts. Of course it's tied to a global pandemic, its interruption on our supply chain. That's one, if not the major reason, that we're in inflation.
Well, if the pandemic is over, maybe we'll see that inflation will be over soon.
Well, or at least it's coming back down. It'll come back down.
He might say that next week.
Yes.
There's no inflation.
Well, he said it last month. Because there was zero for a month.
I think he was, the other thing, that there were quite a few headlines from this interview. He didn't answer. He was asked whether he was going to run. He said he hasn't thrown out he's thrown out the possibility. He hasn't ruled it out, but he hasn't said for sure. So there was that. In any case, check out the 60 Minutes interview if you want to see the whole thing. Okay, still ahead, we need to find out what is going on with our Seattle Mariners. We were on a roll. So what's happening? Rick Riz joins us next.
Gene Ursula.
Holy smokes.
It is so hard to believe, but there are only 3 weeks left before the end of the Mariners regular season. And the question now is there going to be a postseason? I cannot believe that we're even suggesting that there might not be. The voice of your Seattle Mariners, Rick Riz, joins us now. Rick, we're going to make it, right?
Yes. Yes, his ball club is going to make it.
All right, thanks for coming. Yes. See you, everybody.
Yes.
So they're clinging to the final wild card slot and spot in the playoffs with 17 games left to go. So we want to know, are we going to talk to you in a couple of weeks about postseason baseball?
Absolutely. Because Baltimore is hanging on by a thread right now. So the magic number for this ball club, just to get to the playoffs, which would be, as you know, first time in 21 years, is 13. So any combination of Mariner wins, Baltimore losses, they're out, the Mariners are in. Now, the number one thing the Mariners want to do is kind of keep winning because they want that number one wild card spot, because with that number one wild card spot, they would have home field advantage. The fans in the Pacific Northwest deserve to see a playoff game at home. Then they would be taking on either Tampa Bay or Toronto. Now, they're going to be playing each other here in the next few days. So they're going to be, you know, winning and losing here and there. The Mariners have a chance to gain some ground because they're taking on teams that are under 500. However, that being said, you know, the Angels have played very well, but the Mariners have been without two of their key players right now. Eugenio Suarez is out of the lineup on the 10-day IL. He's got the fracture on the right index finger that he suffered a couple of nights ago trying to field a bad hop ground ball. So that's a big, big loss. Julio Rodriguez is still out with stiffness in his back. This will be the third game that he misses. And their absence is really felt because the Mariners have scored only two runs in the last two games. Mitch Haniger is finally back. Dylan Moore is finally back. So the Mariners need to get healthy. But to answer your question, Ursula and Spike, yeah, the Mariners are going to get there.
So, Rick, I hate to even ask. I can't believe I'm asking this. I can't believe you said the words magic number. I mean, it's been so long since Mariner fans could say the words magic number. 13, if you missed Rick saying that. 13 combinations of Mariner wins or Baltimore losses, and we secure a playoff spot. Is it more important for them to focus on getting there or maybe resting the pieces and for the injuries that are going to make it, we have to have if getting there means anything?
Yeah, you got to, once these guys get back in the lineup, you got to go for it. You know, you got to keep playing hard because, you know, you got to have momentum as you get into the postseason. And that's what you want. So, you know, you're going to rest up when the season is over, you know, after the, you know, hopefully they play in early November. That's the goal. We haven't been there ever in our history. We haven't been to the playoffs in 21 years. So, no, you got to keep, you know, the pedal to the metal. But soon as Suarez gets back, soon as Julio gets back in the lineup, we'll find out more this morning from Scott Surface about his condition. Yeah, you have to keep plugging away because you need that number one spot because you don't want to really go on the road to take on Cleveland. If you have to, you got to do it. And they can beat Cleveland. They can beat Tampa Bay. They can beat Toronto. They can beat, I believe, with their pitching staff and that bullpen and the way they hit home runs and score some runs, they can beat anybody. You got to believe that. And the ball club is believing it, but they just have to get healthy here in the next few days.
So you mentioned Julio Rodriguez. He became the fastest rookie in history to reach 25 home runs and 25 stolen bases in the same season. Is he going to be Rookie of the Year?
No doubt about it in my mind. I don't think there's really anybody close. I mean, Jeremy Pena is having a really good year for the Houston Astros. Their shortstop, Adley Rutschman, is having an outstanding year. You know, young catcher for the Baltimore Orioles. But in my mind, everybody else is a distant second to what this kid has done. Ursula, you know, ever since the start of the year, he's hitting almost 280. He now has 27 home runs. That ties the Mariners club rookie record. Alvin Davis, you know, set that standard. His rookie season back in 1984, he has 73 runs batted in. He's played great defense. He steals bases. He's a member of that 25-25 club that you mentioned. One of only three rookies in baseball history to do that. Kurt Young in 2007 with the Arizona Diamondbacks and a guy by the name of Mike Trout, who the Mariners will play today, back in 2012. He's the only guy to do it in a complete single season. The other guys did it, you know, in their rookie year, which followed their arrival from the previous year. So, in my mind, Julio Rodriguez, no doubt about it, is going to be the American League Rookie of the Year.
And the Mariners have made sure he's going to be a Mariner for long term. What a statement that was to the fan base.
Oh, it's outstanding. They recognize, you know, number one, his talent is so obvious. He's 21 years of age. This kid started last year at A-ball in Everett, or up in Everett, and then went to AA Arkansas and made the ball club at spring training. And what it says to the fans is that we're going to keep this kid in the Mariners uniform for a long time. But I've said it a number of times, I think what it says by the organization, it says more about Julio the person, I think, as it does, you know, his talent. Yeah. Because, you know, they see his work ethic. They see him working hard every single day. It's a contract that's very creative. It's between 8 years and 17 years, 14 years and 17 years with options for the player, with options for the ball club. I don't really understand everything about it, but Julio said something very interesting. He said, it's going to keep me motivated to do the best I can each and every day and each and every year. But there's no question about it. You know, they locked up this young man for a long time, and rightly so. It was a great contract. It was a great idea for the ball club. And the fans are going to love watching this kid play for a long, long time here.
Rick, you mentioned not just the possibility of postseason, but postseason baseball here at home in Seattle. And the baseball gods are smiling upon the Mariners. Because as you mentioned, the Blue Jays and Rays play each other, and the M's don't have another game against a team with a winning record. It really is a chance for us to establish a run at a home postseason game.
Absolutely. And like I said, Spike, that's the goal for this ball club, to get that first wild card spot so they can play three games at home. They wind up the regular season at home as we play Texas, Oakland, and then four with the Detroit Tigers. And to be able to stay home after that and take on either Toronto or Tampa Bay, I think would be huge. They would have to come here. I mean, we're going to have sellout crowds at a T-Mobile Park. The fans have been amazing, you know, this year, coming out the way that they have, and all season long. So, yeah, it's so important, you know, to get that home field advantage so our fans can be the 10th man.
There you go.
I love it.
You guys are the 10th man, and we need you. And you've done a great job supporting this ball club, and I can't wait to see everybody come out when we get back home for the final homestand of the year and then into the postseason. It's going to be fun. I got goosebumps thinking about it right now.
Well, after this weekend and three straight losses, yeah. I needed this. Yes. I needed you, Rick.
Yes. Thank you so much for giving us some hope. And then also to the Seattle Mariners and fantastic fans. And yes, it's going to be a much longer season. And this is our year. So let's go, Mariners.
Yeah, we need to get Eugenio back and Julio back in the lineup, and that's going to happen. And a healthy ball club, and when these guys are back in the lineup, they can do some amazing things. And they're so much fun to watch, you know, the dancing after the win and everything. So I'm looking forward to this afternoon's game. Logan Gilbert against Jose Suarez. It'll be the wrap-up game of the four-game series here in Anaheim. So tune in.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Rick. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, Ursula. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Rick.
Okay, still ahead, scenarios when we solve other people's problems. And I got to take a second here because I didn't do it at the beginning of the show. And I am a woman of my word. We need to give the people what they want. Scenarios coming up next. It's 10:49 and you are listening to the G and Ursula Show. Spike O'Neill is filling in for G today, and we're going to get right to it. Let's do
here
scenarios.
We go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
All right, got a quote where due here. So this is from Slate's Dear Prudence column. That's because we don't have G here today. And Spike, this one may be a little bit tailored for you. We'll see.
Okay,
here's the question. While I was away this summer to visit my sister for a couple weeks as she had a new baby, I left my nine-month-old Australian Shepherd mix at home with my girlfriend. She insisted she wanted to do it for me and refused all objections to send him to a boarding center. Within the first week, I was fielding calls and texts about how the dog was too much to handle. I hired dog walkers and even considered cutting my visit to my newborn niece short. She got so fed up with the puppy and so mad at her that she was yelling. I'm devastated for my puppy, who was so neglected and mistreated. But I'm also devastated that this woman I was dating couldn't step up to the plate for a young creature in her care. Being with my sister made me realize I'm ready for a child too. But if my girlfriend can't even handle a sheepdog, how will she handle a baby? Okay, am I nuts for leaving her over this? I don't want to say she's an unfit mother, but based on the example she gave, I think she might be.
I'm going to let you start.
Okay. Well, you know what? That dog has given you the greatest gift of all time. A true look into the person's soul that you were planning on maybe marrying. Pets will show you who a person is. How people treat animals and children will show you their true character. If someone can't be involved enough to care for... I mean, puppies are high maintenance. They're special needs. I know. I've got not one. I've got two right now. And I know a baby's not a puppy, Texter, at the... thanks for pointing
Ryan
that out.
Ryan in Tacoma.
Thanks very much for pointing that out. Yep, there's so many of you. But pets will show you who people are. How people treat pets is who they really are. And if they can't be bothered enough to understand what the job is taken on, so you take on a puppy, and it's more work than you thought, then you hunker down, and you do more work than you planned on doing. You don't neglect. You don't neglect. Maybe I'm just puppies and puppy drunk right now. I've got a dog at home that's 5 months old.
Yeah, and by the way, you had to cut our morning meeting short because you had to take him to puppy school.
Because I didn't want to lock him in a room with a linoleum floor because I was going to be gone for 3 unexpected hours today. That's right. I did the extra, took the extra step, spent the extra money, drove the extra miles to make sure the puppy got the care and attention it needs. It's a baby.
Boy, one of my very favorite listeners, Brian in Bellevue, says anyone who can't handle a puppy isn't going to be a good person. Hold up.
Exactly.
I'm going to,
my new favorite texter, too.
You made it sound like she neglected the dog.
That's what it said.
No, that was his opinion, but she was trying to handle the dog.
Well, she said it was too much, and so he had to hire dog walkers for her. She was yelling at the puppy a lot, apparently. She admitted to that. So it's just too much for her to handle.
Okay. I'm not going to base whether it's one sign, but I'm not going to base whether I marry someone or not, or continue to date them based on one episode of her not being prepared to handle. You got to admit, puppies can be a serious handful.
They're beyond a serious handful.
If you're going to equate that with, okay, this is how she's going to be with a baby, this was not her puppy. This was not something that she totally understood what it would entail.
So you'd have a kid with her, but you wouldn't let her babysit another person's kid.
Well,
right?
I wouldn't.
Why won't this thing stop pooping?
I wouldn't toss her. I wouldn't just toss the whole idea of a relationship, a longer-term relationship, out. It's disappointing.
I would
talk that through. And if she really comes across as callous and can't take care of anything else other than herself, then, yeah, there's an issue.
Two against one here, Spike. Look, there are a lot of people that think that they can never be a responsible parent because they don't water their houseplants and can't be bothered to keep their houseplants alive, right? And you're right. A dog is not a baby. Kai, one of our texters, frequent texter, says that puppies are actually 10 times easier than babies. I might disagree with you on that, but here's the thing. You have an emotional attachment to your own child in a way that you will never have with someone else's dog. I don't care if your friend has the cutest dog in the world. You will never feel the same way about their puppy that you do about your own child.
Are you sure?
Well, not for everybody.
Let's be clear on something,
too. Maybe most people would feel that way.
Let's be clear on something. No parent, when they start out, has experience. But you could raise some siblings, be an older sibling. You could be responsible for the care of another child at some point in your life. But you're never a parent until you're actually a parent. I challenge you to find me the one parent in the world that has not become overwhelmed with their own kid.
Oh, absolutely.
That has not yelled at their child.
Yeah.
Okay? Just realize that this will always be your dog, and your child, if you have one together, will be yours together, but the dog will always be your responsibility.
Hey, hold on, Kai. I got your back. Kai said babies are 10 times easier than puppies.
Yes.
So not the other way around.
No, that was Chef.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh, other way around.
And
yeah!
That's a small detail.
Dan
in the 360 suggests buy her a puppy for Christmas or her birthday.
You cruel
and then see.
Well, no, okay. But Ursula, you made the most important point. It's not worth throwing the baby out with the bathwater,
if
you let me grab a phrase. But it's time to have a conversation with this person you think about having children with and spending your life with. Say, look, you know, sometimes things are more than we bargained for. Things are harder than we planned when we got into it.
Yes.
Are you going to step up when things get harder?
Yes.
Or are you going to say, oh, I'm washing my hands and walking away? Now, she gave you the opportunity to have a legitimate conversation with her before you decide to spend the rest of your life and co-parent, not just co-parent, a dog. And communication's everything.
Communication is everything.
You should know it going in. Don't have conversations after you've walked down the aisle. Have these conversations before you walk down the aisle or the aisle at the puppy store.
And, go ahead.
If you were to ask me, I think drastic measures tossing out this developed relationship, in my opinion. But maybe there's more forgetfulness than we think. And at this rate, sounds like the dog and the significant other might be finding themselves with some more alone time in the future. Suggest one of those robot babies you could try and practice with. That's a good routine to go with.
I love it. That was a fun scenario. Okay, coming up next, agree to disagree with Spike O'Neill. G is off today. This is the G and Ursula Show. I am